Everybody can please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please remain standing for a moment of silence. Thank you. Over to Dr. Graham.
Thank you, Ms. Slattery. I just wanted to give the community an update on a couple of items. One is we are deep underway with our Project Kindness activities, and Project Kindness is where our leadership class and mentoring class from North, the students have been working with our sixth graders now at each of our buildings. They've been to Samoset, they've been to Sagamore, part of Sagamore, and they'll get to Seneca as well. And they're doing activities surrounding some of our SEL initiatives in the district. And I'm going to not go too far into that, but I can tell you that I've been at each of the events so far, and they've been fantastic, enjoyed by both the high school students and the middle school students. And Ms. Hines is going to be presenting, this is like a little teaser, Ms. Hines is going to be presenting next month on some of our SEL initiatives, so we'll save more comment on that for that presentation. I'm going to pass the microphone over to Nicholas and Kaylee, and they're going to give us some updates from their respective schools.
Good evening, everyone. Citra North has had a very successful November so far. While yesterday marked the start of winter sports, we still have some fall sports participating due to their success in the months prior. Our boys volleyball team, boys cross country team, and a member of our girls cross country team are all in championship season. Last Saturday, the volleyball team won a Division I Long Island championship. Everyone was very excited. Winning this made them eligible to participate in this weekend's state championship. They're undefeated at 18-0 going into states, and we're all really excited to see how they do. The boys cross country team took third at their county meet, which qualified them for this weekend's federations. Jordan McDonald is also a solo runner from the girls' cross-country team who also qualified for the state meet and federation meet individually. And furthermore, with athletics, today was the first signing day for athletic commits, and North had several athletes sign, many of which were D1, which is very exciting. So congratulations to all of them. The food drive at North is going really well this year. At yesterday's student government meeting, we had a bunch of empty boxes delivered, and all the food donations we received are being organized into full meal boxes. I always look forward to this time of year because we start to see the end result of our work, and watching our community come together is something I love about Sachem. Next week's going to be nonstop packing boxes and making sure our donations are ready to be delivered. We're all excited to see our plans come to fruition. Thank you.
Hi, I would also just like to talk about our food drive today. Sachem students have been so willing to donate their time to their food drive. It's really amazing to see. We have people almost every period willing to help sort and pack food. We're ahead of North while our classrooms already have their boxes. This past week, we pulled up one day with four full cars to the main entrance, and a group of students out of nowhere just ran up to help us unload everything and bring it to the third floor. And honestly, like, it warmed my heart. It was one of those moments where you just step back and you look and you're just so incredibly proud. It was awesome. I love to see that. And then for the past month, we've had multiple students a day volunteering to stand outside meat farms in Holbrook and collect donations. And honestly, I underestimated how much food this would bring in, but let me tell you, it's amazing. Our neighbors and community have been so overwhelmingly generous, I can't even believe it. Every day, we fill our cars front to back with donations from the community. Yesterday, I actually thought my car was going to tip over. There were so many drinks in the back, my tire pressure went down. So really, I just want to thank everyone involved, and I'm really impressed and grateful for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, Kaylee, and thanks, Nicholas. And just to piggyback on what Kaylee and Nicholas said about their respective schools, we've certainly had a number of teams demonstrate tremendous success in the fall season, and many of them are not done. We also have a large number of musical students who are participating in either all-state or all-county events this coming weekend. Our marching band concluded their season just at the end of last month at the championships in Syracuse, and although they didn't get the place they wanted, I think that by all accounts they would say that they had a very strong and successful season. And so we have as Kaylee said, it's heartwarming to see the great things that are happening throughout our school district every single day. So that's certainly a testament to our community. The next part of the superintendent's report is on the agenda this evening. There is a budget transfer that we're going to ask the board to consider, and a very small part of that budget transfer has to do with some security upgrades that we're looking to do for this year within the context of this budget. So we thought that we would just share a little bit of that information with our community, and that presentation will then roll into a presentation on the code of conduct by Dr. Morrow and a team of individuals and the staff who have been working on the code of conduct. So I'm going to invite Mr. O'Keefe to join me. We don't like to use the microphones, but the audio on the website, I guess if you don't use the microphone, it doesn't work. It doesn't come out clearly. Is that good? No? Okay. All right. So as mentioned, we have a budget transfer on this agenda, and this budget transfer, I don't know, John, do you want to speak to the components of that budget transfer?
Yeah, the budget transfer is about $4.2 million. So, you know, on face value, you see such a large number and you wonder, you know, why are they moving so much money around so early in a school year? About $3.3 million of that budget transfer are just salary transfers. The way we budget is literally by the building, by the grade, by the subject. So it's not uncommon, let's say you have a teacher that's in Nokomis in second grade, and say there's a shift where we need more third grade teachers next year, that teacher now in third grade, the money has to follow the teacher. So if you have 1,050 teachers roughly, for 35 or 40 to move in a given year, that's not uncommon. That's that $3.3 million. Nothing really out of the ordinary. $128,000 is for our TAN interest. So each year we borrow about $60 million or so to give us cash flow until our tax receipts start coming in. We budgeted about $1.5 million, and that was done a year ago, of course. Interest rates over that year went up about 1%, so we're a little short. So we're going to be moving $128,000 in to cover the interest, which is about $1.628 million. And the last piece is a transfer of $800,000. So we did have some contingency money set aside, totaling about $800,000 for salaries. Now that we're into November and we see how staffing panned out, we realize we don't need those things. Certain things that we had planned possibly for next year's budget, which are part of the security upgrades that Dr. Graham was mentioning, are items that we're going to be moving that $800,000 from a salary code to a contractual services code.
So just as an update to our overall security progress, I'd like to call it, is that we are still continuing to work closely with the State Education Department's Office for the Smart Schools Plan. We'd like to believe that we are closer now than we have been before in that approval process. It's something that Jack Rendo, our Director of Technology, has been probably on the phone with daily up at State Ed. That submission, that's where everybody talks about that $11 million allocation from the state. That's a bond. So we lay out the money for the projects once those projects are approved, and then we're reimbursed. That's the security vestibules that we'll have added to all of our schools, along with the visitor management systems. That also included money for wireless throughout the school district and then for student devices with regard to classroom technology. Those are all still coming, but we're still waiting. And it's unfortunate, but we're getting a little bit more optimistic each and every day in that process. And so we also conducted in the spring a security threat vulnerability assessment, and we had someone come in and review us nuts and bolts about all of our practices around school security. And I hope that all of you have experienced or seen some of those upgrades. And you remember we had someone come in earlier this year, Joe Pangaro, who presented on the findings, and there were things that we would share with the community and there were things that we weren't going to. But they were all part of those upgrades. And the reason that we weren't going to is because by doing so, that would compromise our security in some way or shape or form. So we're continuing that work. And like I said, I hope you've seen some of those changes in place. That budget transfer that Mr. O'Keefe mentioned before is a part of our next phase of work that will be fully integratable with the Smart Schools Plan. So all of that technology will speak to each other, and it's a complementary piece. So that deals with, and you could jump in.
Yeah, I mean, currently at our systems, at our schools, you know, we have doors that have keys, and we also have areas where employees have a swipe badge where they can get into the building. That's an access control system. There's about 100 access control points at the 15 buildings around the district. One of the things brought up in the threat assessment is that, one, the system is antiquated and old. It operates off a dial-up modem system. It's not centrally located. Each building has its own controllers. So if a particular employee needs to have access to multiple buildings, the security office has to go into each of these dial-up modems and put that particular security code in there to get that person in there. They have no control of it centrally here at district office. Plus, there's an inadequate number of them. They identified about 40 locations district-wide where it'd be advantageous to have additional ones, whether they be parking lots that employees come into the building, recess areas where employees might go into the back fields and they have no access back into the building. We want to put swipes back there for them as well. So it would be replacing the 102 with obviously modern digitized system and adding another 40 or so district-wide, and then it would also be installing a lockdown system.
The final part of this work that's going to would be all conducted this school year. The final part of that is an emergency alert system with panic buttons, emergency pull stations, similar to what you see with the fire alarm stations, the red boxes. This would all be for those emergency alert situations similar to a lockdown event. And that's all part, again, that would be fully integratable to our Smart Schools plan. This is a part. This is all layers. And this would all be a one-time cost. It would outfit all of our buildings, including this building, and it would be, like I said, within our budget, and we would hope that this work would start relatively soon. Are there any questions?
Questions?
From the board.
So, Dr. Graham, as you mentioned, this is all just a large plan that we have for the district. So this is really just one of the first steps that we're doing for security. And as soon as we get some more money or any money from the Smart Schools Bond, like you said, it will be integrated with what we're doing now. And this is something that we're planning on implementing this year, right?
Yeah, this is fully integratable, is that a word, with all of the purchases through the Smart Schools project. For the vestibules, the visitor management, so when you come in, you scan your license. Those are all a part of that Smart Schools bond. These are pieces that will fit into that. All technology talks to each other. It's not sole proprietary technology. In other words, we can pick a different system at some point in the future, and it will work with this.
Okay.
If we chose to make other upgrades, which we most likely will, those will integrate with this system. But as John had mentioned, the current system that we have is antiquated, operating on dial-up modems, and you can imagine that that's problematic when we're looking at doing the things that we'd like to do moving forward with security.
So then as far as any, if there's any training needed by the school staff or any of the personnel, that's going to be done in-house, I'm guessing?
Yeah. Anything that we would need to train on would be all done in-house. Predominantly, the people who are going to be operating this is going to be our security staff. You know, obviously, we'll have people who need to know what to do from our facilities department with regard to maintenance of some of these things,
mm-hmm.
our custodial staff, our administrators, and all of our teachers, and anyone in the buildings. But it's not going to be, you know, for the user, when you're looking at how to enter the building, we have swipe systems throughout the district. This is not going to be dissimilar to that. In other words, if you know how to use a swipe in our current system right now, you're going to know how to use the new swipe as well. It's not complicated in that regard.
And then the installation of it, is that done by our personnel, or are we going to have outside?
No, that's all included within the cost associated
okay.
with this. So
it could be maintained, though, by our staff.
Yeah.
The equipment is not proprietary, so we can swap out components that fail over time, or say we add 40 access controllers and a particular principal says, you know, I could use one more on this other door. I don't need to bring the company back. The system will already be installed. We could wire in a new controller.
So we can expand on this system.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Anything else?
Okay.
Great.
All right, good. Thank you. Dr. Morrow.
I'm going to ask a couple people to come up and join me. Stephen Backey, who is one of our middle school teachers, Georgia Affendu, who is one of our high school teachers, and then Sue Tuttle, who's our director of special ed, are all going to help out with this presentation today. I think I'm going to switch mics with you. I'm Dr. Anthony Morrow. I appreciate the opportunity to come and present to both the board and the community regarding our rewrites of the code of conduct that we spent over a year doing. And, you know, before we start, I just have to point out there's a slide in here that has about 40 or 50 names on it of people that have contributed, but there's probably another 40 or 50 people that stopped in one day and added to the process, you know, or sent us emails about, you know, things that they were concerned about or they saw going on or they wanted addressed. So, you know, it really was very much of a group project to work on this. And, you know, any good project really has to be seen and put together by a lot of different people with a lot of different lenses. And we were lucky to have that opportunity. So we're going to present it to you today, the broad strokes. The large part of it is in your packet. I'm going to ask Stephen to come up and do the first couple slides.
Sure.
Once I steal the clicker,
it's right behind you.
You got it? You want to click one?
Thank you, Dr. Morrow. As we talked about with the importance of the code of conduct up here, you know, we see a little statute up here about the importance of it, and it's really to maintain order within the school district and within the school. And like Dr. Morrow said, it was a collaborative effort. I won't read this whole thing to you, but if you look towards the bottom on the bottom three lines, it referenced who's covered in the code, which is basically everyone, students, teachers, school personnel. So when we talk about, like, we are SACHM, what really gives our code of conduct meaning is that our values and expectations are articulated in the code for all members of our community. And if you look it through the code, you will see that. And that's, like, really what makes it, you know, important and an important document, really, as a school. And if we click to the next slide, you know, the questions people ask is, well, why do we update this? What is the importance of that? And really, there's a few things up here, like research regarding discipline. Over the years, the academic literature on discipline has shifted from zero tolerance and suspensions to more of a progressive discipline approach. And the reasons for that is we've seen that high rates of suspension, you know, don't really help academically. And our goal here is really to have, like, an inclusion versus an exclusionary policy and help to raise academic achievement and also to modify or rectify behavior rather than just suspensions or expulsions. So that's part of the discipline piece. The technology piece was the big dramatic change in social media and technology, cell phones. We wanted to make sure our policy was up to date and covered all those changes, because now not just the way students are communicating, but the way they're interacting with one another and what they post and what they say is very important. So we wanted to make sure that was covered as well. Additionally, changes in society. We have an epidemic in the society of vaping, and that's something we wanted to make sure, concerned about our students' health and well-being. We wanted to make sure it was focused and covered in that, you know, as well as, you know, how students feel about themselves and identify about themselves, their rights and their protections. You know, additionally, safety and security. We wanted to make sure that our students' behavior, that we protected them and made sure they had a good, comfortable school climate. Comfortable school climate means more academic achievement. And that's really something that we talk about when we talk about the safety and how kids feel in school. And finally, the need for consistency. Throughout the code, it talks about being fair, firm, and consistent. So we wanted to make sure it was clear across all our schools and all our people of what was expected, and then really how to deal with any kind of infractions or any necessary modifications to behavior. And that's kind of like the broad strokes of, you know, why we undertook this.
Good evening, everybody. That's okay. There we go. So I'm going to talk to you about the methodology of how we came about this draft that you have in your packet. It was a process that took about a year, and it was, as Dr. Morrow said, it was a large group of individuals that worked on it. And it was individuals from all buildings, from the elementary onto the high school, from district office. It was teachers. It was social workers, psychologists. So it was, all the voices were represented there of people who work with our students. And I have to say, it was one of the most rewarding processes that I've had in reviewing our policy as a to code of conduct. So we took our time and we did review the literature, and we had long discussions as a big group, and we broke into small groups, and we read what the research said regarding discipline. We looked at what we did as a district regarding our codes, our practices. And when we realized what we were doing and what we wanted to do, we looked at what others were doing. We looked at other school districts, and we also looked at corporations. What were their policies like? What could we learn from them? And as a group, we decided, we identified a language that we wanted all of us to use. Whichever building you went to, you would see the same language when it came to the expectations for everybody's conduct. As Stephen said, our whole community, from visitors, parents, people who come to athletic events, the students, everybody is covered in there, and the language is the same regarding everybody's actions. And one result that came out towards the end, we produced a poster that showed this common language, and you can find these posters in a number of our buildings. It's in my classroom, it's in many classrooms, cafeterias, gyms, so we do have that throughout. Throughout this process, Dr. Morrow would take items that concerned us, and he would take them to our legal experts. So throughout the process, he was in contact with our lawyer, and he would come back the next meeting, and we would go over their response. So throughout the process, we were connected with our legal experts. And the final product was given to them as a whole as well. So this is a list of some of the names, as Dr. Morrow said. There were maybe double the number of people than what you just see there. There were people who came for one or two meetings because they heard about it. They wanted to see what we were doing. They wanted to give their perspective. And so this is the result of these people's work and many, many others. Okay. Okay. Oh, there's the poster. You can see it right there. So you will see this in many rooms in many of our buildings. I think all the buildings probably have them. So what have we done? What are the changes? Well, the changes is that we have an updated and a uniform code of conduct throughout the district, has common language throughout. And something that we're very proud of is the inclusive ISS model that we have at our high schools that also has a counseling piece. So this is goes to what Stephen spoke to before about including, keeping the students included in the educational system rather than forcing them out of the school. These are students who do need more help. They have committed infractions. We are dealing with the discipline, but we want to make sure that we keep them close, we keep them in the academic setting, that we can educate them. So our ISS rooms right now, they are staffed by a certified teacher, and there are periods where specific subject teachers go and work with the students. So you will have a period where the English teacher is there, the social studies teacher, the math teacher. So they get to ask questions. They get help with their work that their teachers give them. And counselors, social workers, psychologists will work with them to deal with and to help them. We don't want to exclude them. We want to help them, keep them near, and educate them. Another result was that we developed common reporting forms. So there's that common language and uniformity has been applied to the practical forms that administrators use. The poster is one of the visual reminders. And the expectations that you will read when you read the code of conduct are uniform for all members of the community that have access to our schools. So whether our students or our faculty are in our buildings or are on a field trip, the expectations are the same, and they are very, very clear, so everybody knows what is expected.
The next piece, we're just looking at the consistency. So our goal with this new code of conduct is that we can have administrators and teachers be provide training, that they have an understanding of the new code of conduct, and also that we're having regular administrative meetings that we can talk about that implementation. The use of eSchool is also supports this code of conduct, that we have more accurate reporting information, but also a more consistent message being used from elementary, middle, and high school. And then the last aspect is the review of the student and parent survey data regarding discipline. Again, that we're looking at feedback from all members of the community, and that we're looking at our practices, that it will continue to evolve, but that it will be on a consistent basis for youngsters to learn about the code of conduct from elementary, middle, and high school, that they're getting that consistent message, that they understood what's being asked of them. And then our future work. First, sharing with the school community, training for students, educators, and parents, and then developing that inclusive disciplinary practice, and then building in that regular review process that we can take a look and evaluate our practices and continue to improve our process.
Thank you. At that point, you know, I just want to thank the three of you and also Jen Smirowski, who couldn't be with us tonight, but she really did a tremendous amount of work. She did yeoman's work on this project when it came to, you know, researching and sharing and helping guide the group. At this point, I want to open it up to questions, you know, by the board that you may have about anything.
Yes. Thank you. Early on, I think Stephen mentioned it. I maybe missed it, but you mentioned zero tolerance. In what respect did you make that comment? Is that language change, or is it something you're going to delve into as far as if we have a zero tolerance, we're not going to use zero tolerance? Can you just explain to me what part of that does zero tolerance come in?
I think when Stephen mentioned zero tolerance, I think he was just trying to highlight the inclusion compared to the exclusionary practices that we participated in discipline in schools for probably the last 10 years, which have led to about 10% more suspensions per year nationally, which correlates to a large number of more students in the criminal justice system and then eventually the adult justice system when they get there. We practice a zero tolerance policy, which means we tolerate no behaviors that violate our code of conduct. How we react to those behaviors differ based on the research and the practices that are found to be effective with students. But I think people misunderstand frequently zero tolerance for you do something wrong, we throw you out. School is a place where you should be safe to learn. School is a place where you should be safe to make mistakes. Now, mistakes come with consequences, you know, but students should be able to work back from those consequences to be productive, effective citizens in their schools.
So we're still going to have zero tolerance for certain.
When they mention the inclusive ISS model, there are certain behaviors and there are certain actions that result in you being out of school automatically.
I understand if someone commits an infraction.
Yes.
And we have a zero tolerance for that. Mm-hmm. The administration and the district can handle that in the way they feel appropriate, which benefits both academic and I just don't want to see the wording, so we're not using zero tolerance anymore, mm-hmm. that you know we'll let this slide or it won't be as drastic as it was. I just want to understand that part of it.
Yeah, the wording hasn't changed.
Okay. Thank you.
I think Meredith, you were next.
So, first of all, I've read through the entire code of conduct, so there was a lot of work that went into it, so I just want to thank you all. The other thing is, how will we be sure that the entire community reads through it? Are we going to... Yeah,
it's a great question. Things that we've talked about with our committee. Now, this is quite honestly the cart before the horse. First, we need to get a new code of conduct in place. Then we talked about... how do we K-12 put things in place that allow for the ability of our students to know what's expected of them? We do have things in place now because our high schools have started to work in that area with freshman seminars, with freshman orientations over the summer, which are very different than they used to be, full-day sessions, where they go into some of the details about these expectations. But we've talked about that. We've talked about working with Mrs. Hines from the curriculum office about utilizing parts of our curriculum, communities on the lower levels, to talk about, you know, what drives our community's behavioral expectations in our school community. When we get into our social studies units in 5th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade, and 10th grade, they're all U.S. history, and they're filled with documents like the Constitution and the amendments and, you know, things that we can tie learning about. You know, this is our disciplinary and our behavioral constitution in our district once it's adopted. You know, so we can tie that into curriculum areas. But again, that comes after this work is done, along with looking at a number of other things that we do in our district. All of our practices are driven by this. So once this is changed and put in place, then we have the ability to look at all those practices, including how do we educate people to know about this. We've had those discussions. We haven't put together a scope and sequence or a plan yet, but conversations about it are in the works.
Sorry, one more. I have a follow-up. And you speak about consistency, which I think is huge because we kind of have a Northeast thing going on, and we'd like to see everything more consistent. Is it going to be, no matter what school you're in, no matter who the principal is, even if we have turnaround, it's all going to follow that same pattern regardless?
The consistent
still kind of in the hands of that school's administration?
No, what we do now is we have regular meetings with our principals and our assistant principals, and to Mrs. Trombetta and Mr. Antonetti's credit and their APs, they're really very open to sitting down and discussing this and coming to consensus on what expectations we have for kids and what the behavioral consequences will be for kids that don't behave that way. And we have probably more consistency now than we've had in many years. And that really is, you know, that's to credit them because they're the ones that set that tone. They share with each other regularly. They communicate with each other regularly. And we get people in a room together. I happen to be lucky enough to be there and guide those conversations. But the truth is, those are the conversations they have. So the reality is that although there's always a human factor to every circumstance and situation in our schools, and we never want to cut that out or get rid of it, our behavioral expectations for someone that participates in a certain type of behavior that's violative of our code of conduct would be similar at all of our high schools or all of our middle schools or all of our elementary. They may be different by the level because the developmental level of our student is different, but they should be similar within each level. You're welcome.
Any other questions?
Is that me?
Is that me?
I
think
so,
that's me.
Yeah.
I'm
going to
use my microphone. I have a loud enough voice. Dorothy?
Thank you for the presentation. It was a good presentation, and I was pleased to hear some areas that you are addressing. And, you know, in the past, I think we've spoken, too, about the out-of-school suspensions versus the in-school suspensions. And when some of these kids have out-of-school suspension, they wind up being out of school for a couple of days. They miss schoolwork. They're home, not supervised. And sometimes it's more of free time for them. Where in school, I heard that now you're looking at having them maybe do more coursework or have some people there to help them, whether it's with some of the core subjects. So they're actually going to be doing work mm-hmm. instead of being home. Which
yeah. The model that we're utilizing now in both of our high schools is we have one full-time TA who's assigned to the ISS room for the entire day. A large part of their role is the transition between classes and to make sure that work is there for each academic subject during it. We have two periods where we have social workers, substance abuse counselors, guidance counselors, psychologists that are assigned for those periods to work with kids, you know, in any area that they may possibly need. Then we have areas where we have an English teacher is there. Everybody that's in ISS for that period is doing English work, and the teacher is there to teach them the work that they need help on, to direct them questions, to guide them. Then the next period we may do math. We have our phys ed teachers pushed in to do sports folio with them. So, you know, comments that we've had, it's because of the way suspension works in New York State and the legal aspects of it without going into all of it, that piece of it is something that we voluntarily offer to parents for students that are supposed to be suspended out of school. If they choose to be in, they're in, and it's an all or none proposition. So they participate in everything we have. Or they don't come. And then once they've chosen that, all but one student so far, all but one family district-wide has chosen that model, You know, then they're in there and they do their work. And it's interesting because I've gone by the ISS rooms and I've met with the kids and I've asked them what their thoughts are about it. And they range from, you know, I'm not taking a math class this year, so it's a waste for me to have to do math for a period, to this is the first time I've been suspended and not come back completely lost, to this is not fair, this is not the ISS that I know. So it really runs the gamut, and, you know, we don't have data support it yet because we really haven't done it long enough, but we're hoping it makes a real positive impact on our kids. And I can tell you that teachers, we have teachers requesting to be in there for their teaching period. They feel that they enjoy working with that student population and that it benefits them. So we've had a lot of positive impact from our teachers, comments from our teachers in the building also.
So it keeps the students engaged and they don't fall behind academically.
Yes.
Because without a school suspension, sometimes they come back and they're lost because they're so behind in their work and they become even more disengaged, mm-hmm. which is what we don't want.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
Academically and socially.
Yes.
So I also saw that you mentioned that you looked at other districts, which I think is great to see what other districts are doing that works and sometimes that doesn't work. Was there anything that you that came across that you said, hey, we should really implement that in Sachem, but it might take a little bit longer to do?
No. I would say we're at that stage now where we're looking at more intensive types of programs and more intensive types of supports. I can tell you that we spoke with one of our South Shore districts who's using an in-school suspension model very similar to this, and they shared with us what they were seeing a couple years in and how they had modeled it. Ours is slightly different, but it's very similar. You know, there are districts that have full alternative schools. There are districts that have alternative schools within a school. And, you know, we're in the process of looking at those to see if any of them would benefit, you know, our population of students and provide them with better opportunities. You know, but I would say this particular ISS model would be the one that we really felt could be brought in now and impact our students.
Okay. And also in when you said under one of the PowerPoints, it said that you reviewed research related to discipline and conduct. What type of research was that?
It came from numerous different research journals. Much of it was ed research. You know,
the peer modeling.
Yeah.
CIS,
yes.
Looking at the different methodologies that the district will buy into.
You know, and much of it shows that, and you hit on this before, the more inclusive you are with kids, the better results you have.
Mm-hmm.
The more exclusive you are, the worse results you have. They've done, you know, numerous studies in the Midwest. They plan their prison size based on their high school suspension rates.
Wow.
You know, it's there's a direct pipeline from the suspension, the out-of-school suspension situations to the criminal justice system in this country. There's a ton of research on it that you can read. You know, so although there are circumstances where we cannot have kids in school because we need and we are obligated to keep all of our kids safe, the more we can keep kids in school and the more we keep them engaged, you know, the better it is for them, the better it is for us, the better it is for Sachem.
And then one more question. As far as the information and the code of conduct, here you had it as far as support and changes that you were looking at communicating more, or having more out there as far as the code of conduct.
Mm-hmm.
So I noticed on the different websites of different schools, the code of conduct is in different areas. Like in one, it might be in a backpack or
mm-hmm.
so it's difficult if you're just going in there to look at the school. There's nothing really that says, some of them do, they're all different, that says code of conduct.
You're
so
right.
Are you going to be changing that so it's more uniform?
We're going to look to do two things. We're obligated to post our code of conduct. We're also obligated to post our code of conduct in a student-friendly language.
Right.
So that's why you see some different iterations of our code of conduct in the elementary schools and the middle schools and the high schools, because we're obligated to post it on there where those students will understand it. But what we're looking to do is make it more uniformly found on the websites, more uniformly found for our parents and for our students, and also more uniform within the levels. So the elementary code of conduct will be similar in each building and posted in the same place and an easy-to-find place. And then the same in the middle schools and the same in the high schools.
So it will be more uniform.
Yes, it will be a lot more uniform, a lot easier to find, and you know, much more manageable for people.
Okay, and then just one more thing. As far as when I read through the code of conduct, and I don't remember exactly where it was, but it said something as far as the consequences of an action – that you're going to be looking more at the student as a whole, looking as far as if there was any prior situation with the student, which I don't know if that was always done before.
Yes, we practice progressive discipline in Sachem currently, and we'll continue to practice progressive discipline. If you and I get into a fight on the playground and you beat me up, and it's the first fight.
I don't know if I could do that, but yeah.
It's the first fight you've ever been in your life, but I happen to get in one every other week. My consequences are going to be different than yours for this same fight, because progressively my discipline is going to be a lot more severe, because the earlier levels of discipline that we have engaged in have not changed the behavior. And that's really the crux of what we want to do with discipline, is change behavior. You know, we don't want to discipline to discipline. We don't want to do it for any other reason than we want our kids to learn that they need to change their behavior. That's a comment about progressive discipline, which we practice currently in Sachem, and we will continue to practice.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. There.
Great presentation. Thank you, Dr. Morrow.
You're welcome.
On when we get our suspension reports from you, so the largest number of suspensions comes from vaping. So has there been any thought to giving an educational piece regarding, like, vaping for the students? Because obviously it's not getting corrected.
Last year we coupled with the Suffolk County Police Department, and we provided educational courses, presentations in our middle schools and our high schools regarding vaping. We also offered one to our community. Dr. Graham and I were there amongst three other people, I believe. It was not terribly well attended.
Right.
Vaping is a huge problem in our country. It's a huge problem in our schools. It's a huge problem in Sachem, as it is everywhere. There's still a lot of people that think vaping is extremely safe, even though many of the reports that are coming out now are saying that it may be more damaging than smoking cigarettes. So we will continue to look to
I was thinking, instead of going to a suspension, you and your parent or one of your guardians must attend a vaping educational something, in lieu of this, because we don't seem to be able to have changed any of the behavior with that yet.
And those are all things that, as we go forward, when we look at our practices, those are all things that we'll certainly look at to see if they'll benefit our kids. We're doing it with our students now, because if you get caught vaping, you spend no time out of school if you choose the in-school suspension model. Instead of 3 days out, you're now 3 days in. All three of those days, you're with a drug and alcohol counselor that educates you about vaping and about what's in those vapes and about what the end product could be for you.
Tony, can I just clarify something also? If you're caught with a vape and there happens to be clearly identifiable drugs in there, that doesn't mean that you have that same option, right?
Your option is vastly different. Yeah. Your consequences are more severe. Depending on the age, the police could be involved. We still do offer part of our suspension for that in school with a drug and alcohol counselor. You would be out of school for a period of time, mostly to secure your safety. If you have a vape that has THC in it and we don't know what's in you, it would be unsafe to really keep you in school and not have you checked by a doctor and make sure that you're healthy and safe. We would then return that child to school. They would spend time in the in-school suspension room with our drug and alcohol counselor two periods a day, and then with our, with our teachers the remaining periods. At this point, we do, yes.
Okay, and then my last question is, for the actual code of conduct policy, we have behaviors that are expected at sporting events of our visitors, parents, on the sidelines. I'm sure if anybody has gone to games, different kinds of games, those behaviors are not always followed or done. Are our security personnel going to be aware of that, or are there going to be consequences? Because nothing's worse than being at a game and hearing constant foul language or yelling from, the teachers, especially as players or kids.
Yes. Yeah, this year we started with all of our student athletes sign what's called a visitor's code of conduct. And they have to bring it home, share it with their parents, have it signed by their parents. They sign it, they bring it back. We also created banners for our athletic areas, our fields, our gymnasiums, where we have visitors that have the expectations for what people should be, for how they should be engaging with there. And then our next steps will be to start to train our people that are there about the new expectations and the new code that we're going to put in place, and then work forward from there. So the short answer to your question is yes, that's something we need to do.
Just mm-hmm. to elaborate on that, Laura, I think she's talking about the parents more so than the kids.
Yes, right. Yes, she is.
So the document that goes home that the parents bring home, are the parents signing that?
It's called the Visitor's Code of Conduct. It's for anybody that visits any of our sporting events. And it's worded in that way. And, yes, the parents do sign that.
Yeah, now, I think they all sign it, but it's enforcing it that's the –
has proven to be more challenging. Yes.
When you're sitting in the stands and you have obnoxious people screaming, yelling, mm-hmm. or even, you know, there could be vaping or whatever going on, it doesn't seem like it's enforced there, and
yes.
it ruins it for everybody else that yeah. is there to attend mm-hmm. to support our teams.
And I can tell you that interacting with, you know, with our supervisors and our security force, I would say that it's not enforced as much as we would all like it to be. And we haven't had the ability to enforce it as much as we would like. We do have people enforcing it. We have people that are in the stands trying to eliminate some of those behaviors, but we certainly need to do a better job. You're very welcome.
Just a question, Tony, regarding the policy itself. Do you foresee any budget effect on this, whether up or down or
Currently, I don't see any budget effect. I believe that our new in-school suspension model is probably going to be supported with the money we used to spend on home instruction. You know, we were paying for a certain amount of time for home instruction for kids every day, and they were being tutored one-on-one at the library in isolation by themselves. We're not doing that because they're in school now. You know, so I don't believe there'll be a negative budget impact to it.
Good, thank you.
You're welcome.
Just one more question. When I went through the policy again, it comes up, there's a part in there about the dress code. And in the past, I've had community members come to me about the dress code and say, you know, my daughter goes to North and they don't enforce it. I know mm-hmm. someone who goes to East. The middle schools are more strict with it. So mm-hmm. are you looking at doing something where it's more uniform? Of course, you have to treat the different levels differently, but
yeah, the enforcement of it, we plan on making it a lot more uniform through our training. The first part of that was making the actual policy more uniform mm-hmm. And more concrete and easier to understand and easier to enforce, you know, which is what we did. And it's a large part of the reason that we asked so many teachers and administrators to come in and work with us on this, because the people in the buildings that are enforcing it were able to say, listen, this is where I have a really hard time in the policy. It needs to be clarified what this means. So we were able to hopefully do that. I'm sure there'll be loopholes because that's the way the world works. But I believe it's a lot more concrete, which will allow us to enforce it a lot more consistently in our buildings.
Okay. And then there's also something in there that says all school district personnel shall dress appropriately and help students develop an understanding of appropriate appearance in school setting. So when it says all district personnel shall dress appropriately, that's a tough part. So how do you address that? Does the principal say something in the beginning of the year to the staff, or how does that work in our buildings?
I mean, typically, having been a building principal for years, if someone were wearing something that weren't appropriate to school, I would have a private conversation with them and then expect it to end. And it would probably not ever go any farther than that. You know, but yes, we would expect our building administrators to make sure that our code of conduct is upheld by everybody in our school, you know, no matter what your role is in our school. And the way this one was worded is more inclusive of language that is geared towards everybody that is part of our school community, us and everybody else that's part of it.
Okay. And then there was also a part of student rights, and it says students have the right to access school policies, regulations, and rules, and when necessary, receive an explanation of those rules from the school personnel. So, but there was no time basis on there. So if a student, say, gets suspended, or whether it's in school or out of school, and they want to get more information about the policy, is there a time factor? Like, do you say it's the next day or 2 days later? Because at some point it could be after their suspension is over.
Well, the education law sets forth the time frames for due process, and part of the process due would be obviously advisement of what the charges are. You know, in this district and any other, you obviously have, you know, sort of this mother code of conduct that is distilled into more digestible versions at age appropriate levels, you know, and promulgated in many ways. It's in your school calendar. I would anticipate student handbooks, and so forth. The Dignity Act, by way of example, requires that you have the, you know, the very specific age appropriate types of, communications that way. You know, hopefully with the, you know, the advent of promulgating these things online, somebody wouldn't even have to ask too hard. They'd just look to that tab and be able to find it. But as far as, you know, the explanations that are due and things like that, that typically is going to be encompassed in the kind of due process that a student would get as a part of the discipline process as a whole. And that's really a matter of law, even, you know, in addition to whatever your policy has.
So at that time.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just one more question, sorry. But as far as the age now, the compulsory age is what?
16.
So what does that mean exactly? So if somebody's going to get out of school suspension.
Yes. It means that we're obligated by law to educate anybody under the age of 16, if you are a general ed student, 21 if you have an IEP, right?
So yeah. It's 16 when they actually turn 16, or 16 in that school year?
Our policies say 16 at the start of the school year. You know, that's what our Board of Ed policies say. That's not part of your code of conduct, but that's part of our Board of Ed policy. So, you know, if you start the school year and you're 15, then we in this district provide, you know, we consider you compulsory, and we provide you that education, you know, in or out of school.
So is that just something that we do in our district, or do other districts say
some districts provide
17?
Yeah, some districts provide it to every student. Some districts, the minute you turn 16, even during the year, you're done.
They don't give you any support whatsoever.
Yeah. So it varies.
So, but we're still 16.
We're 16 at the start of school, if I remember correctly.
So if they say if somebody's 15, they come into school, and in November they turn 16.
We count them for the year as being compulsory.
For that entire year?
Yes.
Okay. But the next year, if anything happens, we don't have to give them any academic support or anything?
We don't have to, legally.
We don't have to.
Many times you end up doing that as a part of the discussion of the disciplinary process as well. It's not a mandate. That you're not obliged legally doesn't mean that you don't do it sometimes.
Yeah, we
as
do
a part
it frequently.
Of the holistic
right,
consideration of the
case. As
far
as what you've been talking about and moving forward, it seems like you want to engage the students and you mm-hmm. want to be able to
yeah.
keep them academically on top of things.
Our goal is to give kids opportunities to learn from their mistakes and to graduate high school.
Especially if it happens, say, in their 11th grade year, which is an important year.
In their 12th grade year, when they need 3 credits. You know,
right.
We sit down sometimes at the table and figure out how we can help a student rebound from a mistake they made.
So have we thought about changing that, the age? Has that been a discussion or not?
Not as part of the code of
conduct,
because it's not really, it's not germane to that discussion and that conversation. It's a completely different set of policies, right?
And again, there's nothing that robs you of the discretion, you know, and I can tell you from experience here and everywhere, even though the age of compulsory education is what it is, you know, the discretion is always there to say we're going to provide the student the support services that we choose to provide them to make sure that they get where they need to be.
But
I mean, that's been the overarching.
That could apply to one student, one
could
school.
Could it potentially result in a subjective interpretation? Yeah. I suppose that could happen, but I think you're always striving for consistency in the application of that.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I need a motion for the approval of the minutes. Dorothy, second. Meredith, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. We'll now move to our first visitor section. This visitor section is only for visitors in relation to what's on our agenda. There's a second visitor session at the end of our meeting that's for things not on the agenda. So, Jeff Kagan.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
I'd like to discuss the proposed policy rewrite for 6675 extra classroom activity funds. It's short, but I think it's a rather important issue. And is a couple of things. One, we've got a statement in the beginning of the second paragraph that extra classroom activity funds are those collected voluntarily by pupils. But when I look at the section that describes the various regulations that are going to be promulgated, there's nothing describing fundraising activities. I believe we heard a gentleman speak within the last couple of months about some confusion, shall we say, about fundraising activities and the implications on their child. I think it's appropriate that we do have some regulations on fundraising activities just to make sure that there are no misunderstandings about the type of things that are happening and the implications to someone who does not fundraise. Number two, it seems that the way this is written, it appropriately only applies to official activities, official school activities. Once again, as I recall from that discussion a couple of months ago, the activity involved a non-school club, a booster club or something like that. And while I doubt we have the opportunity or the ability to regulate how these activities operate, I think it is worthwhile for us to somehow address the fact that it's important that our students and our people know which activities are under district policy and which are outside district policy, and that is clearly differentiated which is which, so that if they are involved in a non-district program, they realize it's a whole other set of rules, a whole other set of guidelines, and wall ourselves off from any problems there. So I hope that's clear. Thank you very much, and if I don't see you, have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Wendy Calabria.
Thank you. I just have a couple of questions after listening to the presentation that I just wanted to ask. As far as the inclusive model, I just wanted to know if it was being used at the middle schools as well as the high schools, or if there's a plan to utilize that in the middle schools. I don't know if you're going to answer my questions or email me later, or I don't know. Should I just ask them all? Or
why don't you ask them all?
Okay, so that's my first question. I had a question about the progressive discipline. You said that you practice that. Are you saying that Sachem's been practicing it like for years and you're going to continue it? Because as a parent, my experience has not been that you're practicing it. And so I just have a couple of questions as far as like what should be expected as far as that goes. You know, I've had my children basic little things that not really big deals to anyone probably other than me. But they are big deals to me, and so they got a consequence for something, and somebody that has received multiple consequences almost received less of a consequence because my child's consequence then impacted their sport's consequence, and it was a whole spiraling effect. So from my perspective, it doesn't – that seems a little, you know, different. And that brings me to my double punishment question. A lot of times, like the student gets detention, they're now late for a practice, which I tell my kids all the time, you have more to lose than other people. Like that's a life lesson. You have to have that. However, it does say something to the children when the one child doesn't get a consequence at all for something and a child that's on a sport now receives, well, now you don't get to practice. Now you don't get to play. Now you don't, whatever it is. And then also, I've had a situation a couple of times where a principal or the discipline took a couple of days to be determined, to be addressed. And so that also opened up a whole nother set of problems because had the discipline been taken and done the day that the child did what they did, it would have impacted him differently than it did when the principal waited several days. Now it was we missed a game or a meet, when it would have been we missed two practices or, you know, and those things, while I understand, and I'm not, believe me, they got in more trouble at home than you will ever put them in here, but for the students, kind of seeing that, it's almost like a double standard, and it's hard to explain as a parent why they're getting double punishment or why they're getting multiple times and or why it took several days because somebody was busy or somebody was whatever. And so now they have a larger, now it's an even bigger consequence that's intended. So I just want to, as a parent's perspective, I know you had a lot of teachers and administrators and faculty on the committee, but sometimes you maybe don't even know certain things are happening because they're not being brought to your attention from the parents' side of it. So that's just something that I've seen happen several times. And I've also had, I met with Dr. Ram about this, I've had staff say to me, oh, I didn't realize that was a rule. Wait, she got in trouble for that? I didn't even know that was one of the rules. So it's frustrating sometimes as a parent. I hear all these great things. I'm excited that you're changing things, but I just want to make sure that we're looking at even little things that maybe you're not thinking to look at. So I just didn't want to put that all in an email. I figured it was easier to just spit it all out.
You've written longer emails.
I know, but I'm tired.
You know, if you don't mind, I'll just summarily respond, and then maybe we can get back to you on some of the
specifics.
Yeah, that's
fine.
Okay. But I think that the next step with regard to some of the punishments, the points, those types of questions that you're talking about with regard to athletics or students involved in extra and co-curricular activities, I think that would be, you know, part of the next logical set of steps that the district goes through. As Mr. Clayton alluded to and Dr. Morrow said, you know, this is our first step. This is casting that wide net, and now we have to start working on all of those things. So when you talked about the progressive discipline, if that's something that we've been practicing for years, I think there are places that we've been practicing that for years. And there are others that it's maybe been a different definition, and because of not fully educating everybody from the district standpoint and saying, this is what this means. So those are all the next steps for us as we continue to refine some of our practices around discipline. And I think it's an important point that you made with regard to a parent perspective as well.
So moving forward, will you reach out as far as asking parents or what experiences have happened? Because if you speak to multiple parents throughout the district, you would get multiple, you would hear things, wow, that never happened. I never heard of that. I didn't see that. And I know you obviously can't speak to everybody, but when you're making big policy changes or big adjustments to a code of conduct, maybe like little things that you wouldn't necessarily hear from the staff, we could give you a little bit of insight on as far as what took place on individual experiences. And most importantly to me is that you're doing this, whatever this that you're starting at the high school, is that you're doing that at the middle school, because I feel like we're missing the boat at the middle school, and then they're getting to the high school, and now we're trying to fix it all, but we needed to grab it sooner, and so is that happening at the middle school as well?
I would think that once we look at our program around suspension and we determine whether or not it's effective with our students, that would be something that we would be interested in pursuing at our middle schools as well.
So right now that ISS with
that
teachers
model
and things
only at the high school right now.
Yeah. Okay. So it's ISS is as regular and if they get
the same as it always
and the
was.
Same out of school suspension, or no, that policy has changed, that now we're trying to give them, they're getting the opportunity to have ISS.
No, the current model for middle school is what it was, ISS and out-of-school suspension.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yep. Thanks.
Thank you. We're now on page 2, business items, consent agenda for business items 3A1 through 3A2. May I please have a motion? Bill? Second, Mike, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Personnel items. Consent agenda for personnel items 4A1 through 4D8. May I please have a motion? Mike, second. Bill, any questions? Meredith?
I just have to recuse myself from 4D6.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. We're now on page 11. Action items. Consent agenda for action items 511 through 515. May I please have a motion? Meredith. Second. Tony. Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Page 12, we're on trips. 521, approval of field trips for the 2018-19 school year. May I please have a motion? Meredith, second. Mike, any questions? Dorothy.
Dr. Graham, I know in the past you had brought up about Frost Valley as far as making it more enrichment for all students and not just some students. So this is just for the students that are in the science honors, right? So are we looking at doing that in the future? Is that a conversation?
We are looking at doing that in the future. This current trip in its iteration for the 18-19 school year is as we've always done it with the students in either living environment or earth science at the middle schools in grade 8. Our hope is that we'll be moving, and I've said this already, but, you know, the devil is in the detail. Ideally, we'll be having a trip that is not reserved for just the honors kids in science in grade 8. At one point, I think the derivation of that trip was that it was fully related to the curriculum of those particular classes, or actually probably earth science, and then it morphed into, you know, this honors science associated only trip. And ideally what we'd like to have is an experience, if we value going away, if we value going to cabins and doing team building activities, or even if it's to look at the world around us, because the environment is an incredibly important topic within 8th grade science for all of our 8th grade students, and quite honestly for all of our middle school students, then we'd like to develop something that helps capture all of the students, but we're not there yet.
That sweatshirt is very valuable.
Okay, so all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried. 522, athletic trips. May I please have a motion? Mike, second. Meredith, any questions? I actually have a question, Dr. Graham. So this is an overnight trip for our winter track team. I know for a period of time we were I think teams were not going on overnight trips. Has there been a change in policy or anything?
I guess I don't know if I don't know what you're talking about with regard to time that teams weren't going on overnight trips. But what we had done, are you referring to last year?
I think, Dr. Graham, I think what we talked about was overnight trips were okay during the season, yeah. In season. What we were refraining against was overnight trips when we were not in season, like during summer and other things. That's my recollection.
Yeah. But like the Sachem North lacrosse trip, that was always in season, I think, right? Wasn't that in season?
I don't know. That one we haven't discussed that one since I've been here, so I'm not sure. The conversation I remember really around trips and overnight trips dealt with following Sachem East and then football camps, and that led to volleyball camp. And so it was these out-of-season camps at which we had teams that were going to overnight experiences out of season, and that's what we stopped doing. But throughout that whole time, even last year, we continued those overnight trips that were in-season competitions. So this is I believe that this particular team competed in this meet last year as well.
Okay, yeah. And I think football, though, camp is done in season for football.
I think we called it preseason. I don't remember the distinction off the top of my head. I could look it up.
Yeah, football starts, like, August 15th, and so it was normally that first week they would go away to camp once the season actually started.
I think what we were talking about is competitions, and then we were also talking about the necessity of those activities. And I think at the time when we made that decision, we looked at the necessity of a team to go to a preseason camp when they could do that here. versus going to a competition in another state where there was competition that was going to be unparalleled or something like that. So I think that was the distinction. I would have to look back at. Okay.
All right.
That was the distinction, and then I think it was going to be discussed later on down the road.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the clarification. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. We're on page 13, donations, 531, donation from Joe Art Photographers. May I please have a motion? Mike, second. Dorothy, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is carried. 532, donation, Chastanity. That's difficult to say. May I please have a motion? Mike, second. Bill, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. We're on 541, policy review. First reading, there's no action required. We're now on 551, approval of budget transfers $50,000 or greater. May I please have a motion? Mike, second. Meredith, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. We're on page 14, 561, recommendations from the Committee on Special Education. May I please have a motion? Meredith, second. Bill, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. We're on 6A1, determinations from the Committee on Preschool Education. Motion. Meredith, Bill, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion is carried. Board of Education subcommittees.
So as far as the legislative committee, we did have a meeting that I updated at the last board meeting, and we're still having communication amongst the committee members, and we're still trying to get Albany to address the smart schools bond. So we've been in touch with some local politicians, and Dr. Graham was involved with that as well, and we're doing all we can to see what we can do to get their attention and to see as far as the process and procedure to get our approvals. So we're still working on that.
Thank you, Dorothy. Anybody else?
Of course, the policy committee, I don't think we have anything coming up for that right now, right?
I think there might be a date in November or early December.
Early
I'll have to
December.
Check and I'll send
I think
it
it's
to
early
the board.
December. We changed it.
Yeah.
And then as far as the audit committee, we had our last meeting, what, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago? So we probably won't have anything coming up for that for another couple months. Yeah.
Budget Advisory Committee, we actually do still need members, so if anybody's interested, please send your applications to Ms. Floria.
Okay. So should we discuss, Dr. Graham? Okay. We're going to call the visitor section now. Krista Gallagher. Yes. And Belen is here also.
Something, is it okay if they, I put it underneath my name, but it's.
Yes.
Okay.
All under.
Yeah, they're all together.
So they're, you're all together?
Yeah.
Okay.
Vaccaro
also?
Yeah, she's right back there.
Does she want to come up separate or together?
Yeah, they can.
Okay.
Yeah, we're all together.
Thank you.
Hello. My name's Leila Grisafi.
Can you make sure the green light is on?
Yes. It is. Hi. Does that work? Okay. Hello. My name is Leila Grisafi.
And my name is Madeline Gallagher.
And we would like to present to you the idea of Sachem having a winter guard. Winter guard is a team that expresses the movement of a show through flag and dance. We would like to have a winter guard because after a season of marching band is over, guard doesn't have the opportunity to continue to practice and improve for the next season. Bands like Mineola and Malvern have winter guards and continue to get higher scores and improve every year. We as a team deserve to have the option to continue to improve our skills. We are willing as a team to do whatever it takes to make this happen. We're asking you that you take it into deep consideration, considering this is our passion and it is coming from the heart. Maddie is a second-year member, and I just finished my first year, and before we joined, we really had nothing. Sachem offers many clubs, but for us, none gave us the same sense of family and passion that Guard does. Since we've started, we now have something to turn to and express ourselves with, unlike before. Guard has not only become a fun activity, but a passion, and it has given us a family we never thought we would have. And I know this is the case for many people on Guard. I want to take this time to thank you for listening to what we have to say. I know we're only in high school, but something like this will help us determine what kind of future we have and what type of people we let into our lives. Thank you for taking the time and letting us speak.
Thank you.
We also have some notes from some Guard members that we would like to pass for you guys to read.
Okay. You can give them to Allison, and she'll make sure we all get copies. Lynn, would you like to say something? Yes, please.
Hi. So I'm also part of the marching band as a color guard, and I think it would be a good opportunity for us to have a winter guard, because a lot of upstate bands that we compete against have winter guards, so that means that they pretty much practice all year round, and we only get to practice for that certain amount of time that we're in band, which is like a few months. We also, I have like numbers to like give you to like figure out what you were thinking on doing. The equipment would be good for both the marching band and the winter guard, because they already have flags and sabers and things that we could use, but in case we need something new, we could also give that to the marching band and we could share, which I think would help a lot. We would also need a competition floor, which is around $1,000. But it is also reusable, so if like the band wanted it, or if we had another competition that we could use the floor for, it's reusable. We also have a coach named Melissa that helps us in the color guard for the marching band, and she's willing to come in and help teach us for a winter guard as well, so we wouldn't need to like find a new coach. Yeah, and then transportation. Transportation and the competition floor, we have a lot of fundraising that we could do that could help with the money. That's all.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, girls. Can I just, if you don't mind staying for 1 second, okay? This is the first we're hearing of it, right? So this is something that we're going to have to look a little into. What is a competition floor?
So it's like a mat that you perform on.
All right. It covers the whole gym floor?
Yeah, it's supposed to. It's like a tarp that covers the gym floor that you perform on.
Got it.
It protects it as well.
So if you don't mind, we're going to look a little into it, and we have two district music chairs, Mr. Jackalich and Ms. Wasdo, and so we'll have a conversation with them about what exactly Winter Guard is and what that exactly would mean, and then we can continue the conversation, okay? Thank you. Sure. Last month was the New York State School Boards Association conference. This year was held in New York City. I don't think that Sachem has been a participant in quite some time. I don't know the date, if ever, but I was fortunate enough to present at NISBA with one of our very own teachers, Mr. John Chiramonte, who was fantastic. So I'm certainly thankful to him. You know, anytime we're out there and we're presenting with the Sachem name, and I think it's been exciting over the past several years to be able to get out there and share some of the great things that are occurring throughout our school district with colleagues throughout the state. It's a great way to get information from them as well and see some of the best practices. So that was certainly the most rewarding part of that conference for me. And then this year we had two of our school board members attend, both Laura Slattery and Dorothy Roberts. So I don't know if either of you would like to just
provide the update on your learnings from there.
Well, we attended the conference. It was in New York City for, what, 2.5 days? And you were able to pick which workshops you wanted to go to. And, you know, one thing that's great about this is that you download the app, and when you download the app, you can look and see who's presenting and what the categories are. And so you really can kind of hone in on the things that you're interested in, but also take a look at things that maybe you weren't interested in. You learn a lot. So Laura and I kind of split up where we were going, so that way we can make the best of our time there. And, you know, one thing for me personally is I went into some, and I just listed some. There were things on legal issues, booster clubs, co-curricular activities, curriculum, social media, programs that other districts were doing. They had seminars about board conduct, as Dr. Graham said, best practices. So you learn a lot, but you also hear from other districts, and it was all mainly board members and superintendents that were there. But while you're doing the workshops, the other people in the audience would raise their hand and say, well, we do it this way in our district, and we'd say, well, we do it this way in our district, and you get a kind of a meeting of the minds, and you really do see other ways to do things, or it brings in new ideas into your district too. But we did have the pleasure of seeing Dr. Graham and Mr. Chiaramonte do a presentation, and the feedback on that was excellent. And it really showed Sachem as far as doing things not only academically, but doing things really for the whole student. So that was exciting to see them present.
Right. And again, to follow up on what Dorothy said, by splitting up, we were able to cover many different workshops and give us insight, which we brought back to share with our other board members. Sachem was presented in such a great light by Dr. Graham and Mr. Chiaramonte. The entire room sold out. They actually had to close the door. There was no more room in for their workshop. And every person there, and I actually received messages on Facebook after it happened, can't believe the presentation or the great things you're doing in Sachem. So it was nice to put Sachem in such a positive light. And the workshops were very helpful. I went to one on just leadership, board leadership, and how to work well with others and get the most out of your time on being a school board member. And I found it very informative and thought of things in a way that I maybe wouldn't have thought of before. So I'm glad that we went. It was beneficial. It was worth taking days off of work and spending time. And again, it started at 8 in the morning till 5 p.m. with no food breaks. They offered no food at all, zero. So it was the only time I've ever been away on a conference or something, like there wasn't even peanuts around. But it was a very educational experience, and I'm glad we got to go.
But next year you're going to have some food.
Something. Okay. Anything else, anybody? Can I please have a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of discussing the employment of a particular personnel? Mike? Second. Meredith? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving.